I can just ask that the recorder be started in the hearing room.
The recorder is on and ready to go.
Okay, a few more seconds here and we will have the Teams recorder on. Okay, Mr. Chairman, the time is 2 p.m. It's September 22nd, 2021. I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Owen Egan and I am the Chairman of the Freedom of Information Commission. This is the regular meeting of the Commission, September 22nd, 2021. Before we begin, we will take a roll call in alphabetical order so that the record reflects who is participating today. When I say your name, please indicate that you are present. Commissioner Barry. Commissioner Chavez.
I'm here.
Thank you. Commissioner Einhorn. Mr. Fuseschi. Mr. Hankin.
Here.
Mr. Shaw. Mr. Streeter.
Here.
Mr. Winkler.
Here.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan, also present. Thank you. This meeting is open to the public and is being conducted solely for the use of electronic equipment due to the COVID-19 pandemic. We recorded it as important. For everyone participating in today's meeting, please remember to identify yourself first for the recording each time you are called upon to speak. All participants are expected to conduct themselves in a respectful manner at all times and not interrupt the Commission deliberations. If the Commission believes any person's conduct is disruptive, that person will be placed on mute at the direction of the Chairman. Further disruption may lead to that person's removal from the telephonic meeting. When the Commission conducts a vote, it will be by roll call. I will conduct the roll. The first item is consideration of the minutes of the Commission's regular meeting of September 8, 2021. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I move that we adopt the minutes of the Commission's regular meeting of September 8, 2021.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Commissioner Winkler, I second that.
Thank you. All in favor, I'll take a roll call. Mr. Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Sorry, yes. Yes, sorry.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Mr. Winkler?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next, we will consider the hearing officer's reports. The hearing officer's reports are all publicly accessible on our website through www.ct.gov/FOI through links on agenda for today's meeting. I will call the docket. If you are a party and wish to address the Commission on a particular docket number, please let me know at the appropriate time that we will take up the cases in the order that they are called. This docket number FIC 2020-0318, James Raynor versus Connecticut Judicial Marshal Services et al. Are you there, Mr. Raynor?
Yes, sir. Present.
Would you like to be heard?
No, not at this time.
You don't wish to be heard?
No, sir.
Okay. Is there anyone there from the Connecticut Judicial Marshal Services? Or anyone there from the state of Connecticut? Okay. With no one being present, I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me. This is Attorney Reed. I just have a very minor amendment to offer, if I may.
Sure.
The revision is offered for paragraph 11. And I would recommend removing the name Mr. Campanelli and adding the following: the respondent, comma, Department of Correction. Therefore, the entire sentence should read, it is found that after applying the redactions, the respondent, Department of Correction, forwarded the record to the facility where the complainant was housed.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I will move that we amend paragraph 11 per the request of the hearing officer to remove the name Mr. Campanelli and replace it with the Department of Correction.
Great.
Your
second?
Commissioner Winkler, I second that.
Motion's been made and seconded. On the amendment, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of the amendment. Mr. Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Mr. Winkler?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Now, with regard to the decision as amended, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I'll move adoption of the amended hearing officer's report.
I second that, Commissioner Winkler.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of the amended decision. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Mr. Winkler?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you very much, Mr. Rayner. You can go if you'd like.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody. Everybody have a blessed day and stay safe and enjoy the rest of your year.
You too. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Next is docket number FIC 2020-03. Robert Lewis Foy versus Roland Cook, Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction, et al. Are you there, Mr. Foy? Foy. Robert Lewis Foy there? Okay, this was a failure to prosecute. Is there anyone there from the State of Connecticut? I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, as you mentioned, the complaint failed to appear, and this was dismissed. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
I second that, Commissioner Winkler.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of this decision. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Mr. Winkler?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. It passes unanimously. Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0020, Linnell Jones versus President Wilson Point Property Owners Association, et al. Are you there, Linnell Jones?
This is Mark Samaruga from Paulman and Conley. I'm appearing for the complainant, Ms. Jones, and I wish to be heard.
Okay. Is Ms. Jones there as well?
Yes, I am.
She's listening, yes.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone there from the Wilson Point Property Owners Association?
Yes, William Ward from Ackerley Ward, and I would like to be heard.
Okay. Thank you. We'll mark that ready. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0069, Robert Cushman versus Chief Police Department, Town of West Hartford, et al. Is Robert Cushman there, please? Is there anyone there from the town of West Hartford?
Mr. Chairman, yes, it's Colleen Murphy. Just wanted to let you know that neither of the parties intend to appear in this matter.
Okay. I entertain a motion then.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
I second that, Commissioner Winkler.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of this decision. Mr. Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Winkler?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. All right. We'll move back now to the one marked ready, which is docket number FIC 2020-0020. But before I begin, I will ask the Executive Director and General Counsel, Colleen Murphy, to please make some general announcements.
Sure. As has been indicated previously, this matter is being recorded in its entirety, so there's no need to request a recording. It will be available on our website soon after our meeting. And second, pursuant to our regulations, oral argument is 10 minutes per side, and I'll keep track of that for the parties.
Thank you. All right, so we're back on FIC 2020-0020, Linnell Jones versus President Wilson Point Property Owners Association, et al. Are the parties there?
Yes, it's Mark Samaruga, still from Pullman and Conley, here for the complainant.
Okay, and?
William Ward for Wilton. Point Property Owners Association, which is the respondent.
Thank you. All right, that's Attorney Samaruga, would you like to begin?
Yes, thank you very much. I'm sorry we all can't be together, but we'll get through this COVID crisis eventually, I hope.
I agree.
Yeah, we can all stipulate to that. My own background, this is kind of odd because the last time I was on this type of issue, the idea of a functional equivalent, you know, I was on the other side, argued that the entity I was representing at that point was not a functional equivalent. So when the client, you know, had to convince you, more importantly, had to convince me to take this case because I had a predisposition. And I would argue I could be a pretty tough burden. And they convinced me. And in that regard, I would say that I disagree with respect to the decision that the WPPOA, I'm going to use that acronym repeatedly, instead of Wilson Point Property Owners Association, we believe it should be viewed to be a public agency or a functional equivalent under the eyes of the FOIA. And we believe that that's consistent with the FOIC's prior decision. That was the outcome that should take place. Now, I don't want to go regurgitate too much of what's been briefed. I think it's a pretty clear factual record about what the Wilson Point Properties Association is in terms of where it is. And among other things, though, the key is the articles of associations explicitly say that this is a what's called a body politic. You know, that term is, you know, it's a term of art. And it specifies in the articles of a corporation or association, specifically the powers of the WPPOA. And that includes some of the more prominent ones I point out are to build, construct, improve, repair, and maintain roads and streets. And likewise, the same with sidewalks, gutters, drains, ditches, culverts, bridges, water courses, and the like. To provide police protection, to grant rights of way easements, and impose levies and charges, and to hold and purchase property. And if you promise to renew. So that's the general powers of this organization. And the board of directors of the organization exercises family control over Wilson Point area. Now, we would argue that the Articles of Incorporation or Articles of Association is not somehow a dark document. It actually does reflect what's going on the ground. You know, the budget, I think, was in the record, the idea that there is considerable money being spent with regard to police powers. And what WPPOA has done to discharge those police powers in terms of hiring security guards or security officers and no like police officers to provide security protection. I think there was a reference to the fact, well, these people don't, they may not be armed. Whether someone is armed or not, that's a decision by those exercising police power. It is still a police power. And also there's a reference in the records of the fact that considerable money is spent on maintaining and caring for roads. And capital improvement. And there's in the record what is going on in terms of the ability of the board of directors to exercise control over these roadways to allow golf carts to make those decisions. I think it's also in the record the association has levied charges based upon the assessment role of the city of Norwalk, but also they will deviate from that. They've exercised their authority to countermand that and add an additional charge. Now, look, you have the definition of what is a public agency, part of the FOIA. Now, the Articles of Association do state that it is a quote-unquote body politic. And I think it was no, and my post-hearing brief when I wrote it back in November, I indicated there was no, it was not defined in case law or statute. That's why I was referring to Black's Law Dictionary, because that, frankly, was the only basis to do so. So it was not any attempt to hide anything. It's just, ironically, there is no set definition in the state statutes or the state law as to what is a body politic. You know, there's a pure reference that it's generally a body politic with an entity having and exercising governmental power. So that's that term is used in a case called Dukas versus Beauregard. And an idea of what a body politic is in terms of exercising some functions of local government, control over a prescribed area. These are things that are important. Exercise the control of the political area. And again, while there's no statute that mentions, that defines what a political body politic is, I did a quick Westlaw research, and it is used in the general statute approximately 47 times. Always in the context of defining certain governmental and quasi-governmental bodies. So, you know, there's the common usage of that term, body politic, the term we use, always use. And we should try to use what the common usage of any term is, which a body politic is a public body, a public agency. So we would believe that the body politic, the fact that it is a public agency, in the eyes of the FOIA, which resolved the issue, we also argued it is a functional equivalent of a public agency. And again, you have the body of law in terms of the factors for what is a body, what is a governmental functional equivalent of a public agency. And a key one, I would argue, is an entity performing a governmental function. Again, these are always case-by-case considerations, everyone's lawyer's favorite term. And we look at this termination. Now, I wanted to say at the very outset, there's probably some worry that if you rule in favor of my client, somehow you're opening up some floodgates to all homeowners associations. And you're not. I think we cite in our brief, I think I want to say 14 cases where similar entities have been found to be covered by the FOIA as a public agency or functional equivalent. World will not come to an end when you've done so. If you're not meeting all these standards, if you don't have a governmental function, or you're not a political body politic, you won't be covered. But we argue this entity should be covered. We point out the governmental responsibilities, inherent core traditional responsibilities as a body politic in terms of construction and repairing of roads, bridges, sidewalks. These are things generally governmental bodies do, granting easements. Policing, police powers, again, that's a governmental body, that's a typical function. Independent discretion in setting the assessment, taxing, levying. And again, we cite, again, everything's different, it's a fact-by-fact, case-by-case basis, but we point out the similar associations to the WPPOA have been found to be covered by the FOIA. And we note that, and we cite to that. And we point out, point them in the brief. Now, I point out, we do cite to them, and I guess there's two buckets of cases when the commission, with all due respect, and the proposed decision, distinguish between my cases. There's bucket one, which is, well, these entities were not created by a special act of the legislature. That by itself is not dispositive. It may be one fact. It may go to whether one of the factors of a functional equivalent test, but it's not dispositive of whether it's a governmental function. The other bucket, for absence of a better term, is was footnote four of the decision, or proposed decision, where the hearing officer just says these seven cases or so, that she didn't think there was much analysis in those cases. My view is these are your prior decisions, and you found this. Whether they now, people do the analysis or not, is this your analysis in these cases? And again, we would say for the functional equivalent test, this is, in terms of governmental functions, this entity is engaging in them for all of these aspects. So we'd argue that this should be covered by the FOIA. Now, look, I point this out that the cases I've cited, you know, there's been this, both the commission's proposed decision and counsel for the respondent have distinguished and taken pot shots at my case at decisions we've cited. I've not seen cited by them specifically a case where a similar organization, similar to WPPOA, was found not to be covered by the FOIA. I find that kind of remarkable that all that's happened in their briefs, and by the way, the decision, proposed decision, the two briefs, including one brief that was recently filed, I would argue out of time by the respondent, none of them cite to a specific case where a similar organization, similar association was found not to be covered. All the cases we have, we say some organizations are covered. And this is important, I would just say, finally here, look, we all know the reason for the FOIA. You know, we can speak liberally, you all know that, to express, you know, concern that people have some sovereignty over the agencies which serve them, and that you favor disclosure. And the fact is, it's a way probably to resolve problems by providing access to information, which is a noble, you know, the resolve thing by having the free exchange of information. And we would argue that's the noble aspiration of the FOIA. It remains that way, but also point out that your prior decisions, the ones we seek, have all, for civil organizations, ruled in favor of these entities being covered by the FOIA. So we would say in that context, the proposed decision by the commission should be rejected. Instead, you should find otherwise that this is covered by the FOIA. We also would argue that we've not missed one of the areas of the dispute. we've not received all the records that were requested. So I respect that, respect this commission deeply. I think this is a situation where you should honor your prior precedent. I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Property Owners Association.
Oh, yes. William Ward. Yes, William Ward from Ackerley Ward.
First and foremost, I'd like to point out that council continually represented that the commission has found in similar cases. Our briefs indicate no, there aren't similar cases because the functional equivalency test that he's relying on, there are four prongs to it, three of which don't apply to Wilson Point. The only possible one is performs a governmental function. And the hearing officer, based upon all of the evidence provided at the hearing, determined that there was limited governmental function. First and foremost, they have part-time security officers who have no enforcement powers, who only authority is to report an incident to the Norwalk City Police or to the Board of Directors. That's not police power. That's just surveillance power. Second of all, yes, they do collect common charges, but that's pursuant to the Connecticut Common Interest Ownership Act. If you look at the complainant's cases, they are distinguishable because the facts are not similar. The association that the commission has ruled are subject to FOIA have been granted broad governmental powers, power of eminent domain, power to regulate health. Those are significant governmental powers that Wilson Point does not have. Their main argument appears to be because in the 1920s, when the Articles of Association were created, the nomenclature body politic and corporate was put into the Articles of Association. Somehow that makes it a public agency. Well, in over 90 years, no court has ruled that that language makes it a public agency. Rather, and I think that's also very illustrative, that no court case has ever taken those four words and said that is a public agency. The normal language also says, and other government exercising governmental powers. Well, they don't. They're very limited, as the hearing officers found. Also, there is a statute that governs Wilson Point. It is the Common Interest Ownership Act. There is a specific statutory provision, 47260, which governs owners' access to records. And with all due respect, the association believes in good faith it has provided all the records requested by the complainant. If she does not believe that, then through the Common Interest Ownership Act, she has remedies. But the association has produced everything in response to her request. And to substitute now a FOIA request to supersede the statute and overruling the hearing officer's proposed decision certainly would not be in the best interest of HOAs around the state. The ultimate decision that the board or the commission has to make is whether only a partial prong of the four-prong functional equivalency test with limited governmental functions as found by the hearing officer is sufficient to extend the reach of FOIA into homeowners associations. I disagree strongly that if the commission overturns the decision, it will not open the floodgates. What would happen is you would be giving individual owners two bites of the apple. They file for under FOIA, they file under the Common Interest Ownership Act, and that certainly isn't the intent behind the Freedom of Information Act. And for those reasons, I would ask the for the commissioners to adopt the proposed decision of the hearing officer.
Could I be heard briefly in rebuttal? Very briefly?
First, let me see if there's any questions. Do any of the commissioners have any questions?
Sorry, they need to cut anyone off.
Okay, Attorney Samarugo, yes.
Yeah, briefly, we're not relying just on the functional equivalent test. We're also relying on the fact that it is an agency that is the term body politic. Second of all, about the police powers, that is the term that's used in the articles of association of this very organization. They call themselves calling it police powers. Yes, they may not have eminent domain, but there's some of these entities that have been recognized as being covered don't have powers that we have, which or your entity has, which are maintaining roads, which is a pretty significant one. You point out that no court case has found that in itself has the body politic. Those four words mean they are a body politic, because I don't think anyone ever sought for the legal action to challenge that a body politic is not a body politic. So I admit that. And so we would argue it's not only the fact that it's the functional equivalent test, it's also the fact that it's, you know, that the actual powers. And I would point out the homeowners association, it's not going to open up to all of them. It's only going to open up those that are body politic and do some of the powers that, you know, for example, the road construction of roads that's specifically mentioned in the articles of association. Thank you.
Entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I move the adoption of the hearing officer's report.
For a second.
This is Commissioner Chabet. I'll second that motion.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion?
This is Commissioner Hankins. For some strange reason, I enjoy reading this type of case. They're fact rich and a nice macro analysis, that type of thing. And I believe, you know, after reading this, the decision and reading the briefs, I come to the conclusion that the hearing officer's proposed decision, you know, carefully follows the law and the facts in the case. She correctly applied the law, so therefore I would agree with wholeheartedly with the decision.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Chabet. I would like to observe that this issue, it is an interesting case. It's been well briefed and well argued by the parties, so I commend both sides for presenting it in the manner that they have. In my mind, this is a question of interpretation of the statutory language as interpreted by longstanding case law, which the parties seem to agree really goes back to the Woodstock Academy case from 1980. And it appears that there is no real argument as to whether this entity was created by statute or is funded by the government. The answer in both cases is no. And I believe that the hearing officer's consideration of all four factors under the applicable test is appropriate, and I support the hearing officer's decision.
Thank you. Anything further? Hearing no further discussion, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of the decision as drafted. Commissioner Chabet?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Mr. Winkler?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, counsel. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Hey, Kelly?
Yes, I'm here, Mr. Chairman. I think next on our agenda is the report on pending appeals, and we had two arguments this week, one at the appellate court, or I guess last week on the appellate court, and one at the superior court this week. I might turn it over first to Attorney Reed to just talk briefly about the appellate court case involving Avon, which we referenced last week or last meeting when the argument was coming up. So I'll turn it over to Attorney Reed to just fill you in on what happened there.
Okay, thank you very much, as Attorney Reed. I argued this was the Town of Avon versus Freedom of Information Commission, and also involved in it was Joe Godoy. This goes back to a request that he made of the Avon Police Department for to inspect records and for copies of records. And we found that it was wrong for the Town of Avon to require a signature prior to the disclosure of copies. And that's what our order found. And then the judge affirmed our order, but added some additional language that said our order, insofar as it prohibited Avon from having a rule that requires signature prior to the inspection of original copies, that was clear error. And so we argued to the appellate court, as did Mr. Godoy, that we never made an order that involved the inspection of original public records. The court reviewed our arguments, and the following day, upon their own motion, requested supplemental briefs from all of the parties regarding standing in the issue as to whether Mr. Godoy was actually aggrieved by the court's decision and why they shouldn't just simply dismiss the appeal, because, as we argued, he was not denied access to the inspection of original records in spite of the judge's language. So we are currently, they want a 10-page brief by the 1st of October, so the parties, including the commission, are working on that brief now, and the issue of aggrievement as far as the plaintiff in that matter goes. So that's where it stands. Whether there will be further argument or not, I do not know. I believe it will just be the submission of the supplemental briefs. So that's where that one stands now.
Thank you, Matt. Second, I'll ask Attorney Ross, if she's on the line with us, if she could just share with you what happened in her Superior Court argument. I think it's Sarah Brash versus the FOI Commission. I'll let her speak to that, and I see her now. Go ahead. You're muted, Attorney Ross.
Okay, now can you hear me?
Yeah.
The argument was the day before yesterday, and we got a decision on the merits of the case yesterday. So it seemed that the judge actually had already written his decision before the argument. But just very briefly, because I don't think that we've had an opportunity to provide a copy of that decision to you, which we can do the next time around. But just briefly, the issue in the case was the exemption for uncorroborated allegations. And Sarah Brash was seeking records from the Yale Police Department. You might recall this case, actually the underlying case, garnered some national media attention. It was the so-called Napping While Black case. Sarah Brash called the police in the middle of the night and stated that there was a stranger in her dormitory who should not be there. And as it turned out, the stranger, the quote-unquote stranger, was another Yale student. Sarah Brash is white, and the sleeping student was African-American. And it was a big, big controversy. The argument on appeal, the video, the records at issue were videos, and Sarah Brash wanted the video recordings of the interviews that she gave to the police when they responded to her call. She argued on appeal that these records were not compiled in connection with a criminal investigation, so that therefore the exemption didn't apply. We argued that when the police get a call in the middle of the night saying there's a stranger on the 12th floor of a student's dormitory, they're going to investigate a crime. And her counter was, well, I never used the words trespass. I never used the word harassment. I didn't say those words. Well, the judge didn't buy the argument at all. So we did get a good, we got a good decision in our favor. And she raised some other
arguments that were that aren't even worth mentioning because they were so ridiculous, really. And the judge didn't really give them much credence at all. So a win is a win.
Good job.
Thanks. Danielle actually gets the credit on this. She was the hearing officer and did an awesome job with this case.
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I'll just report that a case that we reported on at our last meeting, I think, where we had a ruling in the Lauthert matter, where Ms. Lauthert was seeking an order that we hear her case against the commission, and that was dismissed or denied. Just want to let you know that Ms. Lauthert has appealed that to the appellate court. Fresh into our inboxes. So there will be more on that down the road. I think that's it on pending appeals for now. Under executive director's report, not too much to report today, although I'll just let you know that our internal staff meeting will occur with our reopen committee to discuss our operations going forward. You'll recall that we decided to continue with our operations in this remote format and had decided that we would revisit it in October. So it's approaching October, and we'll be meeting to discuss how things are going and, you know, what we think we ought to do going forward. So that's coming up. Beyond that, I don't think I have any other executive director's report updates. Under staff reports, I can report that we extended an offer, which was accepted, to attorney Jennifer Miller for our staff attorney 2 position. And we'll send you out a little something to tell you about attorney Miller's credentials. She comes to us from the state's attorney's office. She has some really good appellate experience and beyond. So we're really looking forward to welcoming her on board later in October. So that is done, we think, for now. Under legislative report, I don't have any report at the moment. Under new business, no new business. So I think that concludes, unless anyone has any questions for me, happy to answer.
Mr. Chairman, not hearing any questions, I move that we adjourn.
Commissioner Winkler, I second that.
Made and seconded. I'll take a roll of those in favor of adjournment. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Mr. Winkler?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. We're adjourned. Thank you, everyone. Appreciate all your help.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.